Hello everyone, Christopher Gallagher here. Just a message before we start the weekly. We are producing 8 podcasts this week covering all Celtic news and getting you ready for the Glasgow Derby on Sunday. Earlier this week we had the opposition analysis, which covers all the stats and tactics side of the game for Sunday. On Friday, we have the weekend update streaming live. Myself, Chris Gallagher, Alan Edgar and Callum Gordon will be looking at the press conference from Brendan Rodgers, and we'll be taking questions and comments and looking ahead to the derby itself. On Saturday, we have the Cynic Wars, which is an audio Celtic team building game as the panel battle out in the ultimate game of betrayal and intrigue. And on Sunday, we've got the coverage, which will be pre-game coverage at halftime and a post-match reaction with myself, Christopher Bowd and Christopher Sirmani, and some music to accompany it all. You can sign up for all this content as well as other daily Celtic content at thecynic.co, or you can check us out on Patreon for a more tiered approach, patreon.com/thecynic. Now it's time for the Cynic Weekly. Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. It's the 4th of April. It's 2024. It's Thursday. It's the early afternoon. And we are headed towards the big Glasgow Derby. Can't wait to get involved on Sunday. I'm a bit nervous, Stuart, I'll be honest. Stuart Diggins here. Hi, Stuart. How are you? What's your feeling about it?
I think we're all a bit nervous. I've been trying to not think about it too much, but then I would say roughly every day I'll have at least one lengthy conversation with someone about it and how it's going to go. And today I've elected to have that conversation with you.
Thank you. What a guy. Well, you meant the listener. Yeah, of course.
I meant you. I didn't want to slight our other guest, though, so I thought you would want to complete the
trifecta. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Eddie Walsh, all the way from Long Island, New York. It's a pleasure and a joy to have you here, as it always is. Eddie, how are you feeling, sir?
Similar. I think Stu kind of meant the collective you, all of us, me, you, whole hand to the listeners. I think I'm fairly nervous, but I think I go through day-to-day kind of thinking about things to kind of justify some sort of confidence, which I will kind of release to the listener today in some respect.
But the Walsh down, files will be unleashed.
But deep down, definitely nervous, but excited that I'll be out for the game. So,
I've been doing all this justification in my head about how we're going to win and why we're going to win and looking for signs in the universe and stuff, and being like, well, when this happened in 2008, I was doing this and therefore we won. So if I do that at this point, been doing all these deals, it's wild. The derby makes you do crazy things. Eddie, as we mentioned, you are in Long Island. Can you tell us a little bit about you? Because there'll be a lot of people listening based in Glasgow, based in Ireland, based in, you know, England, based in all around the world, listening to this podcast. And they'll be, you know, have their own, you know, process of watching the game. How will you watch the game? What time will it be where you are? Will you watch it in the house? Will you watch it with some friends? What will you do afterwards if you win? Just paint a picture of the day from your point of view.
So as with every game, it seems like it will be a 7 a.m. game on Sunday. Usually just watch it in the house, but this particular time I'll be watching it with Liam Divers and some folks in the great borough of Queens, New York. So that should be exciting.
How does the travel work for that, Eddie? What time do you need to leave your house, for example, to get there for presumably a pint beforehand? And what let's be honest, what are the legalities of that as well? I'd like to know. I'm not a narc, and nobody's listening. It's just me and you, mate.
I mean, in New York, there are no rules. If the bar's open, the drinks are flowing. So
Is it 24-hour licensed in New York?
As far as I know, I mean, bars are open until like 4 a.m. here, usually. And there are some bars that open at 6, 7 a.m. For games and or otherwise. yeah, there'll definitely be some drinks.
What pub is it?
It's the Wild Goose in Woodside.
Let's get back to the travel because it's not easy to commute in a big city like that, and you're on an island, so come on.
Yes. So haven't really thought about how I'm going to get there. If I drive, it'll be an hour. If I take the train, it'll probably be maybe a little bit longer than that with transfers and stuff like that. And usually the main train that connects, I know Liam, to where the bar is always shut down on the weekends. So I think he'll probably have to cab it there, but he's definitely closer than I am.
Well, famously, what they say about Liam is that you can't hide money, so I'm sure he'll be fine.
I'll have him get me a taxi from Long Island.
I think it's interesting, like, everyone's kind of different journey of getting to the game. Obviously, it's 7 a.m. where you are, Eddie, and it'll be all different time zones throughout the world. So whatever you are, whatever you're doing, hopefully you get to see the game and enjoy it. We're going to look at the game itself. We've got some Derby memories we want to talk about, but I want to open the podcast with a question. It's a question that's been discussed quite a lot on social media. Lots of people with different kind of thoughts and takes on it. Stuart Dugan, what defines a title race? Is a title race something that has to happen right up until the last day? Is it something that, what defines a title race for you?
I think a title race really covers a situation where feasibly either team can still win the league. And I think that I saw a tweet earlier on talking about how in Ange's first season, you know, we only won the game in the penultimate game of the season, but you would argue that it was more or less done and dusted after that final derby. And I guess with this one, I do understand the justification that this is like the bit closest title race in years, and this is the biggest game in a decade and stuff, because there is like not a huge amount between the clubs just now, even in terms of the performances, where both teams look quite fallible, but both teams have been quite consistent with results for a period of time now, if you take the Hearts game out of consideration for Celtic. I also think that, and this is something that's given me a crumb of comfort, that if Celtic don't win on Sunday and then Rangers win their game in hand, you're talking about a 5-point swing with still a derby game at Celtic Park. I don't think it's completely terminal if Celtic lose on Sunday. I think it's a massive hit, obviously, and you're then taking it out of your hands. But just the nature of the league this season, I do think it's still possible that if Celtic won the rest of their games and, you know, if Rangers, it's perfectly feasible that they could still drop points. So I suppose it would just be a title race when either side can still win it. And I do think that this one is going to be much closer and potentially down to the wire, even potentially down to the last day if you're talking about permutations, which is obviously horrible. And it's been a long time since it's been that. And I think that, as I say, that on paper, Celtic won the league with the penultimate game, but it was quite assured and it would have been quite a capitulation to have had it gone the other way. So it's a title race up until it's not, basically. And I think that this one, just with the amount of games that we've got and how close it is, will probably go all the way.
What's your thoughts on it, Eddie?
Yeah, I think obviously it's exactly what Stu said, as far as, you know, you think anyone could kind of take the title, whether it's through a string of good performances or just kind of the last day. But I guess I think of it more historically as, well, bar kind of 10 years, historically as kind of the back and forth of it, you know, where you're kind of paying attention to results, you're paying attention to every goal, you're kind of, it's a different type of nervousness, I guess, than just the general nervousness in a derby game, when you're kind of nervous against you know, Livingston away, or you're nervous in any other game other than, you know, the derbies. I feel like that's the all-encompassing kind of title race for me. I just think of, yes, it will be kind of who pulls in front, but at the same time, I think, as Stu said, when both teams are kind of putting in similar performances and having similar ups and downs, you're waiting for somebody to kind of pull ahead. I know on goal difference, obviously we have the advantage, and which is kind of weird, I guess, just how the season's played out just in general. It's a weird feeling to kind of read that. But yeah, for me, I think it's the back and forth that I kind of, whether it's nervousness, it's full-time nervousness, but the back and forth of kind of results and feeling like it's going to happen, it's not going to happen. You know, whatever, like 2 months ago, we were all kind of forget it, it's over, you know, but here we are on goal difference and a point ahead. So.
Both good takes and both good points. What I would say is there's almost a, whenever we've had kind of true title races right up to the last day and stuff, it's not been obviously contemporary times. But when we have had them in the past, it's almost like you're set up from the beginning of the season for there to be a title race. And so you're looking over your shoulder from that first game of the season. Whereas this season, we at one point, because we were so far ahead and they sacked their manager, it just felt like it was going to be a bit of a procession, that we just needed a bit of consistency and we were fine. The fear and the animosity around it, for me personally, I don't know if it's the same for you guys, is probably just stemmed from that dip in form that we had around November, December time. It's not even really felt like a title race until the last couple of weeks. Or not even the last couple of weeks. Yeah, probably the last couple of weeks. Just because the game started to fitter away, and then you have to come up with that realisation. Because 3rd of April 2022, Celtic win at Ibrox, 2-1, and we go 6 points clear. That was Ange Postecoglou's first season. Obviously, last season was his second season. Almost to the, so the game's on Sunday, and that's the 7th. Almost to the day, the 8th of April 2023, Celtic 3, Rangers 2, we win that game. And we go 12 points clear.
Taylor. And O'Reilly! A Kyogo! He's at it again! Rangers have been so good! And then Celtic go and do that to them! And once again, it is Kyogo! Jota early ball in, and Ben Davis is there to meet it. Or Kyogo!
That first season, we weren't expected to do anything. So the fact that we came from behind to kind of usurp them and then, you know, go 6 points clear is some kind of turnaround. But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's an interesting point. Stuart?
When you're talking about omens, though, I don't like that, because essentially that would be the narrative for them. Because one of the great frustrations that you find yourself in a title race, and it's very exciting for the neutral, and it's great for Sky, and they can milk it for all it's worth. But this has been completely self-inflicted,
yes,
from Celtic. And I also feel like we only started to really properly get our act together when it was, right, now they're a point ahead, or now they're 2 points ahead, and we need to be perfect, because if not, then it's gone completely and there's nothing to play for. And I think that the swing going from, you know, as being whatever it was, 8 points clear, whether they had a game in hand or not is irrelevant, to potentially being 5 points behind is going to be very, very difficult to stomach, just because you know that they have been consistent. They've not been incredible, but they've been very consistent. And the fine margins by which we've dropped points in games is just maddening. And I say fine margins as in there's always been a straw that's broke the camel's back, and then you've conceded late like Kilmarnock when there could have been a goal coming for 20, 30 minutes. But just an inability to kill off games that you should have killed off, an inability to compete in games like the Hearts game at Celtic Park, it's just baffling when you look at it and think of all the missed penalties and all the missed opportunities. The Hearts game at Tynecastle there, if you score that penalty, but if a butterfly flaps its wings, it's all that sort of stuff. They're all fine margins. And I just think that we've burned so many opportunities to be comfortably in control of the destiny of the league that it now just kind of
feels
like it all comes down to Sunday, even though I'm saying that I think there's still life in it after that, but it's just an enormous amount of pressure.
I mean, obviously, I think the same. I think, you know, no matter what happens on Sunday, there is still potential that we could win the league and stuff. But, you know, if that wasn't to happen, I think there would be more anger at the club, Eddie. There'd be more anger from our side at our own side rather than being, you know, we wouldn't even, I personally wouldn't look to them at all. I'd be like, well, this is, as Stuart has just said, this is all our own doing. We've shot ourselves in the foot. We've dropped the ball. And then that's when you look into the, up to the kind of boardroom and you say, you know, asleep at the wheel.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think I've said this kind of for forever, and I think Celtic are in charge of their own destiny, just based on kind of how we know things go. I feel like the pendulum kind of is swinging a little bit our way, just with players coming back now. And you know, I think the Livingston game personally was, I don't want to say turning point, but I think it's a game that maybe earlier in the season we would have lost or drawn. So, but yes, I definitely think it'll come down to us turning a really, really harsh eye towards the team, towards the manager, towards the club. I have no control over what the other team does as far as their dealings, as far as who they bring in. And it really doesn't matter, I think, because when we're running on all cylinders, we have the best players. I mean, we still have a better team in my mind, and we kind of always did. There might be players here and there, but I think in general, we have the better team. So it's just a matter of us performing to that. So, you know, it lays, I know, obviously a lot earlier on when we were kind of floundering, when we were, you know, a point behind, everybody looks at the manager to kind of see where the motivation's coming from. There was, you know, performances where we looked completely asleep or not hungry enough. But, you know, I think at the same time, our 11 was kind of in flux as far as new players coming in, who's going to kind of put that consistency of performance, you know, to kind of help stand out so they would take the starting shirt. But now I feel like those performances are coming through. Like, I'm pretty sure we're all going to have the same 11 to start on Sunday, just based on consistency of performances recently. So I do feel slightly positive about things now. But yes, if we, you know, somehow happen to fuck it all, I think it's definitely down to us and us only.
Yeah. Did you want to come in there, Stu?
Well, I think that inquest is coming, whether you lose on Sunday or whether you get pipped by a point it is in the last day of the season. I think that it's not like a baked-in excuse, but it's the baked-in narrative. Not because it's not true. That's very true. It's completely been our own fault. And if Celtic get over the line, you could argue that we've sort of squeaked through and it's been as poor a title-winning performance as you've seen from a team in years and years and years.
But also, Stu, quickly, I'm sorry, it makes it even better if we do that.
It would, absolutely. and all of it is fine in retrospect. Even watching the Livingston game at the weekend, after you know that you win 3-0, you look back and you go, that was really comfortable. We didn't look like conceding at all. At half time, I was beside myself because I was like, this is going to be one of these games where someone's going to get sent off or we're going to give away a penalty, and suddenly you fucked it before you even get to Ibrox. But then you look back on it, you're like, nah, we're actually really good all game. There's where we weren't quite as good end product in the final third in the first half, and then it just all sort of clicked and you've got lots of really good stuff and lots to be excited about. So it's all in retrospect, and it might be the same on Sunday afternoon, you could be sitting going, what were we even worried about? Like, that was an absolute breeze. Or you look at it and we've had the same failings as we've had before and they don't show up. And yeah, so.
Yeah, what I think is interesting is the idea that we win this league and it's been a really poor show from us all season, but we still win the league. Dine off that for 4 or 5 days. Get yourself, have a nice time. But then that's when the inquest comes. Because you do have to enjoy that. You do have to enjoy sticking it to them, you know? And then the inquest has to come. And I think it probably will.
Oh, it's Toma whips the corner in. Oh, what a strike that is! Paolo Bernardo! The power and the glory! Celtic have the lead on Derby Day, and the first goal in these games is usually crucial!
I want to talk briefly about Alan McCoist, a person that I don't like, haven't liked, and I don't think I ever will like. Just on his comments, we're not going to sit here and, you know, talk about Scottish government legislation. That's not our bag. But there were some quotes about the hate bill that he had on TalkSport, which is clearly a sporting network within the UK that, you know, here's the quotes. We've got a hate bill, by the way. A hate bill has passed in this country, in the country yesterday. England has its own hate bill. There are hate bills throughout various kind of democratic Western European countries. And I can guarantee you, next Sunday at Ibrox, I, along with 48,000, will be committing a breach of that hate bill in the particular Rangers versus Celtic game. We are all going to. It's madness. Yeah, what a wild thing to admit on national radio. We're not going to spend too much time on it, but, you know, I'm someone who's... just McCoist makes me ill. I despise him. And so I also think he's slightly... There's a slight danger with his cheeky chappiness. What's your thoughts on it, Stuart?
Well, it goes without saying that it's an idiotic thing to say. But that's perhaps where that cheeky chappy sort of act gets you in trouble potentially. It's an idiotic thing to say, but idiotic things are spewed out on TalkSport on a minute by minute basis. Yeah, so yeah. It's not the sort of thing that's going to really leave you reprimanded or strung up by a broadcaster because they literally just talk shite endlessly. I think that the whole point and the whole quote was madness. Like, he started going on about J.K. Rowling and all that as yeah. well. And just like, that's what you get on these talk shows where they're just having to fill time. And I'm sure if he wasn't explicitly referring to sectarian singing, it's very easy to make that assumption given the problem that the club have with sectarian singing and a reputation for it. So again, just a very, very stupid thing to say. And he was working last night. He was working for TNT last night. It's not the sort of thing where he's going to lose any work or any sleep over it, I would imagine. It's a bit embarrassing when he's had to come out and go, oh, I'm actually not going to the game. I'm going away with my kids. But I don't think there'll be anything made of it other than just it's a stupid thing to say from a stupid person. And that's about it, really.
Yeah, no, but it's Alan McCoist. It's not
undeniably.
The fact is, in 2011, when he was a Rangers manager, they refused to speak to the BBC because of a documentary on sectarianism. And his quote was, "The whole thing was put together to show I had a flippant attitude towards either religious bigotry or trouble between Old Firm fans. As most people know, I don't have a flippant attitude towards those subjects." I mean, clearly you do, if you're going on national radio saying, you know, that you're going to breach a hate bill.
Well, evidently, and you can... I saw a lot of people on Twitter trying to defend it and talking about how, you know, how could he be sectarian and be flipping about sectarian beliefs when, you know, he was there with Tommy Burns and blah, 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 and carrying his coffin. You know, it's just...
They're not different. They're not mutually
exclusive. It's really easy. And he showed you how easy it is to kind of play both sides. I think it's bigger news just because he's kind of been... The whole darling of the color commentary the last 2 years, everybody kind of fallen all over themselves, like, oh, he's so funny, he's so charming, blah 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 blah. But yeah, I mean, it's similar to like when you go into a pub and some random guy just starts talking to you, and you know, starts spouting some insane shit because he just needs to say it.
I don't know. I don't know how we're supposed to take, you know, how we're going to have a grown-up adult discussion about sectarianism in Glasgow in the west of Scotland.
But nobody really wants to have that discussion.
Yeah.
So right. I think if there was some sort of like peace talks or like we're going to really, really all work together to clamp down on that sort of thing, and then he says something like that, you're like, fucking hell, come on, we're trying to get some progress here, or the clubs are talking or trying to do something. But there's no appetite for that. There's no appetite for that within their club. They try and monetize the sectarian elements of their club with orange strips and this, that, and the other. So,
yeah, Tom English was very quiet after talking about Celtic.
He sure was, wasn't he?
Singing about the IRA. But, you know, again, someone who only brings up one side of it. It's really pathetic. Anyway, let's kind of move toward talking about guys in the pub. Navrotsky and the Brazen. I really shouldn't, but I absolutely fall for that hook, line, and sinker every single time. I still go back and look at those Jota pictures and just think, at least he got it for 5 minutes. It's good. It's good to see, because it was the Brazen's like TikTok. I don't know if it was like an organized event or whether he just popped in or whatever. But Eddie, like, connecting with the kind of local culture of the support and stuff, it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's kind of interesting that it was him in particular. Maybe he's kind of seeing what type of goodwill works the best for him to kind of get him back in good graces. But yeah, I mean, he seems like a really lovely guy, and I think he is talented enough to play for us. Maybe not necessarily starting, but I do think he could be of use to us when we're playing Stephen Welsh and Liam Scales in front of him. And I, you know, you could say that, oh, that's, you know, Brendan Rodgers or whatever, but, you know, he could actually be wrong about things. It's very cool. And obviously he was looking for a nice, nice cheap pint. So he was in there.
Stuart, you know how in the Simpsons, right? Where the 101 Dalmatian one, where Mr.
I was almost going to say the exact thing,
but I was going to say it's like so Navrotsky's there and he's the dog, and it's like, oh, look at Navrotsky at the Brazen, and then Lagerbielka turns up at Grace's, and it's like, get that cat out of there.
I was thinking it was more like Jota is the dog, and they're like, oh, Jota is at the Brazen, and then Navrotsky turns up and go, get out of there, you fucking shit, who are you? It's nice to see. Obviously, I think it's a very political move, or he's just not got a lot on. And why wouldn't you go for a wee afternoon pint if you're not going to be playing at the weekend? So
he might not have a lot on.
Good luck to him.
Good luck to him. You know, if he'd went on if you go between Monday and Thursday, cheap.
Was he wearing a retro top?
No. Exactly. He got it all wrong. He was just wearing civilian clothing.
Oof. Yeah, he needs to have a whole photo shoot going on. Outside, inside. Yeah.
O'Reilly, how about that for a pass? Jota! How about that for a finish? That is Jota for you! And that is Celtic 2, Rangers 0, and the champions have a firm grip on this.
The referee beaten. Am I right, Stu?
Aye, they're at it. I think it's
a
mad thing has happened. Especially when you consider that had Rodgers been suspended for the two games would be refereed by the two people that he made complaints about. And you have to think that's got to be personal at that juncture. He's embarrassed them. They've tried to embarrass him. I think John Beaton's a very poor referee. I think he's a known Rangers fan as well, which is not ideal. But I think that the decision to put him in the middle of this, the only person that it really ramps up the pressure on is himself. And that can go either way. It really can. I think it could go against Rangers, where he is so stubbornly trying to prove his competence and his lack of bias that he has to give a soft decision one way or the other, or he doubles down and you have this narrative that, you know, he can't be involved in Celtic games because he's shown incompetence or worse, corruption. I think it's a bad decision considering the stakes. I can see why they would do it if it was a sort of spiteful, churlish thing for the SFA to do. But given the stakes and the circumstances, you really don't want any sort of VAR decision or refereeing decision to potentially decide the destination of the league, let alone this particular game.
Yeah, so it's Beaton's the referee, Nick Walsh is in the VAR room, and Willie Collum's the fourth official. The Avengers, Eddie, the Avengers.
It's really funny. I mean, if it wasn't so, you know, kind of made for disaster. And I think, you know, you could sit here and say, oh, well, you know, they should have gotten someone else. I mean, you're going to get a poor performance pretty much from anyone else. But I think it's what we know about who is in charge that makes it even more kind of laughable and ridiculous. I think that's probably one of the bigger things that I'm worried about on Sunday. Just in general, obviously you have that feeling throughout every game, but obviously the man in charge, and it truly does seem kind of like this really petty thing that the SFA have been like, all right, well, we're going to show you, we're going to put all three of your biggest enemies in charge of the game. It should fucking make for an interesting one, that's for sure.
Stuart?
I don't think it's going to be something that Rodgers necessarily dwells on with the players, but it does feel like the kind of end game of this siege mentality, where he talked about it a lot, that he needed a man's performance going to Ibrox from the players, because he was going to need them to really stand up to this pressure, and specifically Scales and Lagerbielka, I suppose, but there was a lot of inexperience going there last time. This time, it's going to be a different situation, but you're still going to require that. And literally everything is stacked against you, where the narrative is that they are the stronger team and that they're the more consistent team and that they're a better team now than they were even since December, which doesn't really scan. And now there's referees as well. And I think that that's probably what he'll instill in them. It's just they're going to have to be so good and perform so well on Sunday that they can't allow for any of these external factors to affect the result of the game. And I think that's maybe a positive thing, because you can't take anything for granted going into a game like that. And I suppose they just will be hyper alert.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting, like, if Celtic were to, let's say we were to be really convincing, let's say we went 4-0, and the referee still has a terrible, terrible performance, I'd just love Rodgers to come out and say, beaten again! You see what I'm saying? Just to come out with a total line of just like, just
imagine we won 4-0. What are you on? What are you talking about? That'd be wild.
Oh, brother, wait till you see it.
Dembele, delightful take. Forrest now, and it's Rogic. And it's a familiar story. Tom Rogic has scored it all. Celtic are hoping that has set the tone on semi-final Sunday.
We asked for some Derby memories, just some great Derby Day experiences. We got some from the listeners. I'm going to read some of them out. Matthew Shaw. Hi all. My favourite Derby moment would have to be playing the old Rangers at Celtic Park in 2008. The game is always remembered for Knack as an absolute stunner. However, the moment for me has to be Big Jan scoring with basically the last kick of the game. It was absolutely class, and even better for me as it was the first Derby game I ever attended. Wow. Was a game that had absolutely everything. We missed a penalty, shock horror, I know, and they went down to 10 men. It's a moment that seems to be lost in time because of the wonder goal, but if Big Jan doesn't score that, we don't win the title and we don't win 3 in a row. I just feel like an amazing moment that doesn't get the appreciation it deserves when it comes to Derby moments. Thanks for all the content, guys. That's from Matthew. I think Andrew Connor also says the same thing. Favourite derby moment has to be the last minute Jan Vinegar of Hesselink goal. A frustrating night that looked to be petering out along with the league challenge, and the sense of relief around the stadium when that went in was magic. Drove us on for the rest of the season. An amazing goal. I was sitting right behind Naka's goal. That's why I always... incredible. We also had something from Ken. Hello, Weekly Gang. My favourite derby game was 1992-93. My very first. We beat the old cheating mob 2-1. Mini riot on the Gallagate. What more could you ask for? We better much better years. But there's been much better years and there's been much better matches. But you never forget your first. Love hearing you all afraid, nervous going into Sunday, just like the last two. And I'll be able to send my usual voice message. Hail, hail, up the dubs, Ken. Stuart Duggan. Before we move on to the actual game itself, give me a Darmy Mamini from yourself.
I think I've spoken about this before on the pods, but the Scottish, the semi-final, the 4-0 game at Hampden, when our work had been given two sets of comps. There was two Celtic tickets and two Rangers tickets. And one of my work colleagues is a Rangers fan and he'd sorted it all out. And so we'd been given the two tickets and the taxi driver dropped me and my mate Sean off at the Rangers end. He like wouldn't go round. And so we had to walk through all the Rangers fans, which was very unpleasant as it was, but like trying to keep a low profile. And as we were counting down the turnstiles, it just looked like we were in the Rangers end. And we were terrified that he'd fucked up the tickets and he'd taken the Celtic ones and we'd taken the Rangers ones. So as we're walking around and we're counting down the turnstiles, we're like, no, this is actually really bad. Like, what are we going to do? Are we just going to go in? And that was when they had, like, you know, a split allocation at Hampden. So it's not like there was just 700 of them or whatever. But it turned out that we had the right tickets, but we were just the very first turnstile on the other side. So we were basically just, like, separated by a couple of rows. And obviously you go into those games and you just think it's a cup game, anything can happen. And then fairly quickly you realise that there was just levels between the two teams and that it was actually going to be incredibly straightforward. And there's just so many moments from that game that were just hilarious. Like obviously the goals and slapping them about, but then the Halliday stuff and all that, and the red card and just everything. It was wonderful. And to be sat so close to them all and to have all the bile and the animosity to begin with, and then just to see them slowly ebb out of the game was wonderful.
Eddie Walsh, yourself, give us a derby memory.
I think just briefly before my memory, which I've said probably many times because nothing beats it, but how Stu said that, you know, it wasn't like there was only 700 of them. Like, you guys were just going to take on 700. Like, 700's manageable.
Yeah, we could have dealt with that. I could have definitely managed to fit 700 of them, but a few thousand. And...
But also how, you know, each game against them have so many kind of different memories, different storylines within one game, which I think, I mean, you can't really say that about many other derby games around the world. But mine would be just... It would be after kind of a bender of a weekend, a trip that was canceled. My friends were supposed to go skydiving in Virginia, which is not my bag, but got canceled. So we all kind of just went out every single day. And I think the game was at 7 a.m. It was the Eddie game who, you know, when he came on and scored that amazing goal. But we were absolutely shit-faced by like 10 a.m. and I had to go home to my grandfather's for dinner. And I think when I got there, I was just kind of just staring. Like, people would talk to me and I would only answer if someone actually spoke to me. But I also remember my friends were kind of taken home by a taxi. They said they wanted to go to a different place and the taxi was, so one of my friends sleeping in the back of the taxi, another one just like, everybody else was bombed and they were just like, yeah, we're just going to take you home. You don't have to pay. We're just going to take you guys home. But
that's,
yeah,
a classic, classy move.
That was a great day. Yeah.
I love it might've been like a Simon Ferry interview, but the one that Josh Windass did where he was talking about that game where beforehand they were so charged up and then they scored really early and he said, he was like, oh my god, we're going to win the league. Like, that was his first reaction. And he was like, and they were playing on. I'm like, fucking hell, we're going to win the league. This is amazing. And he was like totally buzzing. And then they get the goal back, and then Dembele scores at halftime. And then even with the red card, he's like, fucking hell, we're going to win the league. And they get beat again. It's wonderful.
And all of a sudden, Celtic are advancing. Edwards! Celtic are ahead for the first time, and with 10 men. Keep your distance, Rangers, is the message from Celtic. Keep your distance.
Tomorrow, we will be doing a weekend update. It'll be live from 6 p.m. If you want to sign up for that, if you're not already signed up to The Cynic, thecynic.co. This will be our... We've got 8 podcasts this week. So if you go to thecynic.co, you can find out all the details about how to sign up. Daily Celtic content, and a great way to keep up with the club and have a good time. So the game itself is on Sunday. It's a 12 p.m. kickoff Celtic Park time. Just looking through some kind of stats and stuff of, you know, just recent games. Brendan Rodgers, right? Brendan Rodgers has won 12 of his 15 meetings against Rangers as a manager in all competitions, drawing 2 and losing just once. 80% win rate is the highest of any manager in Glasgow Derby history in major competitions, and he has both matches since returning to the club in the summer. Rangers have won just 1 of their last 9 meetings with Celtic across all competitions. That 3-0 Diddy game when we had already won the
league. Also, the one that Rodgers lost was a dead rubber as well, was it not?
That was in that the one he lost was a was it December time? It was kind of.
I'm thinking of a Lennon one, I think.
Yeah, you must be, because yeah, that was. I know the one you're thinking of. That came at the end of that season as well.
Yes. Because I remember I had a bit of ITK and someone was like, just so you know, the team have been in Ireland like partying all week. And I was like, got a derby at the weekend. And it was the one where like Rangers scored a free kick really early.
Tavernier scores like within the first minute or so, yeah.
I think that was a dead rubber,
but that's when Rodgers had left. But the game...
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, the game that he lost was in December. Kyogo Furuhashi has scored in both meetings between Celtic and Rangers this season, of course, which takes his tally in the fixture to 7 goals in 11 derbies. The last player to net in 3 league encounters in the same season was... Guess? It was 2017-2018. Who was the last player to net in 3 league encounters in the same season? I'll give you one guess each. Stuart.
Dembele?
Nope.
Eddie. John Sinclair.
Tom Rogic.
The ear cupping.
Superb. Since Rangers
ankle breaking ear cup
returned to the top flight in 2016, only one Celtic player has scored more goals, more Premiership goals against Rangers than Kyogo. So Kyogo's got 5 Premiership goals. He's got 7 goals all in, but 5 of them are league goals. 2 of them are in the League Cup. What other Celtic player since they've came up in 2016 has got more goals than Kyogo in the league? Guess each.
I'll go back to the well with Moussa Dembele, just because he had that hat trick in the league. You don't look like you've not smiled as if to say, Stuart, you've nailed that. Well done.
it's a fair point. It's a fair guess, but it's not true. Eddie,
I will go for Odson Edward.
Correct. Odson Edward.
Top of the table.
Some respect on his name.
It's funny because I went, that's not Stu. That's not right, Stu. Eddie.
Yeah, I saw that. It was a nice little trick.
Bit of fun. Mark O'Hara has got 6 goals against Rangers. He's the second player to have scored as many goals against Rangers as, yeah, second top goal scorer. So there you go.
Now, Chris, I know the article that you're reading those stats from, and you've not read out the one that gives me a wee bit of fear.
What one's that?
The one that says that it's been 20 years since lost the first 3 derbies of the season.
I know, well...
That one doesn't suit our narrative.
It doesn't.
You guys have gone and done it, you know? We could have just... Could have just moved on, but we did it.
I've taken all the data and I've plotted it to suit my narrative. Rangers,
stats are not facts.
Rangers have won just one of the last 9 meetings with Celtic across all competitions, coming in a 3-0 victory last season. Having lost both derbies this term, the Ibrox side could suffer defeat in each of their first 3 Old Firm games of league season for the first time since 2003-2004 under Alex McLeish. Is that what you mean?
That is what I mean.
Aye, I'm not up for that, that's true.
Rangers, do you know what, that doesn't cover though? What? A draw would be a perfect way to get around that statistic.
Yes, that's very true. Question from our good friend Kevin. Kevin sent in a message. He actually sent in a picture of it was Rio Hitati's put out on Instagram, and it was a link to his blog. It's a link to his blog, but the picture is him like on a plane. And Kevin's like, I'm unsure if this was yesterday or today, but why does it appear that Rio Hitati is on a plane going somewhere?
Just chucked it.
And I messaged him and I was like, oh, it's just the blog post. He's like, panic over, me and my brother have been flapping about for the last couple of hours. But Kevin's other question is, do you think Kyogo not scoring in his last 11 away games is a worry? Kyogo Furuhashi, is he key to this tomorrow, Stuart? Because there's been a lot of talk about our midfield, and rightly so, of course. There's been talk about players making it and players not making it, rightly so, of course, and we can touch on that too. But Kyogo Furuhashi, with his record in this fixture and having already scored 2 goals this season, are people maybe not giving him as much praise for that sort that form in this derby as they should be?
100%. I think I know there's a lot of discussion about Callum McGregor, etc., but I'm sure that if Rangers could pick one player to not play, actually they probably would pick Callum McGregor, but I'm sure that the second one would be Kyogo, because I think he just has some sort of X factor against them, and I think that they're most fallible where his strengths lie. And I think Alan made the good point, maybe on the agenda this week, about how there is no way to play against him, and everything that they try, the goal that he scored at Celtic Park there, where he's like absolutely smashed one top bin with his wrong foot from like 20, 25 yards, you can't give him space anywhere. So how do you defend against him? And I think that where Rangers are most fallible are, you've seen it when they've conceded goals fairly recently, the Motherwell game, the Hibs game, the likes of Goldson and Suter just getting dragged all over the place. And I think that that's where we can really exploit them. And I think that Kyogo is the perfect player to do that. And he just seems to save up his most composed moments for these games. And I think that he will have a say in it ultimately, because you know that he's going to have a chance or two, and it's just whether or not he takes them, and he often takes them. So yeah, I think that he's possibly your match winner.
Well put. Eddie, yourself, your thoughts, Kyogo, what does he do? What I would say about, there's something about that, we always talk about muscle memory when it comes to certain things. Just when you start to score in this fixture, it becomes like second nature. Larsson developed that second nature. Dembele developed that second nature. Edouard developed that second nature of being able to score in these derbies. And, you know, Kyogo has that. And do you think that him being on that team sheet tomorrow is just going to rattle them a bit?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I think everything that Stu said is kind of spot on. I also think there's kind of an X factor about how kind of Kyogo goes through the game just in general against opponents, but especially Rangers, you know, with, you know, whether they think he's kind of a bullshit artist diver, which makes it even better when, you know, he's patting heads, making sure everyone's okay and shit like that. Like, I think there's this kind of, whether he is doing that on purpose or not, there's this kind of old school, like, get it up you type feeling with Kyogo, which is kind of funny because he's just like this little elfin type person just bobbing around. But I think, like you said, the muscle memory, but also kind of just the ruthlessness in his performance just all around. And obviously their two central defenders are just – easily fallible, easily kind of riled up, especially Goldson. I feel like he's, kind of primed for a maybe like a red card or something, just as far as...
The guy should have had at least 5 red cards in the last 2 seasons. True. And he's not had any. So.
I also forgot who's refereeing the game. So, but yeah, I do think there's an X factor and kind of a ruthlessness about Kyogo, especially in these types of games. So absolutely, he's going to be, putting the fear in them like he usually does. So.
Riley's header suddenly gives Kyogo a chance! Fabulous finish! His old firm scoring spree continues! And how about the timing as well to really hurt Rangers in first half stoppage time?
Kyogo, the X factor... Is Hitati the secret weapon, Stuart? Just because he's an incredible footballer on his day, he performed incredibly well against Livingston. Rangers, I'm just not sure they're going... I don't think we know what to expect, and so I think that's a good sign that they will not know what to expect, considering, their pish.
Yeah, I mean, I was as surprised as anyone to see how sharp he looked against Livingston, because we know traditionally he takes a few games to sort of get his eye in and get up to match fitness and the speed of the game, and even against a team like Livingston where you've got so much of the ball, he was playing outrageous, expansive passes that only he can, really. And I think that's maybe something that has been missing for so much of this season in terms of bringing Kyogo into the game. When Kyogo's making these runs and he's then sort of throwing his hands by his side because people aren't seeing them, Breo Hitati sees him and often finds him. And I think that could be pivotal. I think that you are right with a sort of larger point about the game, that there are quite a lot of unknowns. I think it is odd that the sort of perceived sort of momentum lies with that Rangers team when I thought they were quite roundly beaten at Celtic Park, and you're only going back a couple of months. In terms of the differences that you have to their setup, I suppose it would be the introduction of Diamande and Silva and how much of a difference that will make on the game. I think it will probably make them a bit more competitive in the middle of the park. But depending on what happens with McGregor, you're possibly talking about Celtic's strongest midfield, where we haven't had that in either of the two games against them this season. We also haven't had Cameron Carter-Vickers, which I don't think can be out sort of looked when... The chances that were created in that game at Celtic Park were, again, largely self-inflicted by just not quite being able to play out from the back, or just not having an enormous amount of composure, and the team looks so much more composed with him in it. So whether or not that limits their chances, we've also seen excellent performances when Celtic have had the backs to the wall, which might well happen again on Sunday, and you would much rather have a Carter Vickers in there than a Stephen Welsh and a Scales combo, for example. So I think there's a lot of differences in terms of how the teams will actually line up that do make it quite difficult to call. And I know that you could look at the two games previously from this season, but I think that Michael Beale it's easy to take a pop shot. He's just genuinely such an average coach and manager, and that I don't think that it should have been a surprise that the result went the way it did when you sort of look back and see how his tenure panned out and how he did at Sunderland as well. Obviously, the Rangers team now are a lot more competent, do the basics right, which they maybe didn't necessarily do earlier in the season, but we did still see that out of them in December. And as I say, they were still pretty much well handled until the last sort of 10 minutes, when it became a little bit more of an issue with mentality because we'd been a bit fragile. So I think it's going to be a totally different game. And I think that makes it pretty horrible as well, because you just don't know how that looks, whether it's more comfortable or less comfortable for us.
We had a podcast this week, the opposition analysis. It was Graham McKay and Christian Wolf, and they talked about how Rangers are going to set up and the stats surrounding Rangers so far this season and, their approach. Here's a little clip from it.
Do you notice anything different, anything that's evolved from that game to the way they were playing against Benfica? Can you see a kind of like a tactical blueprint from them?
You mentioned a game, Celtic Park. I said that I wasn't very impressed with Rangers in it. And I think the one thing with Ekpil The one thing he was good at, I thought, was setting Rangers up, especially in an organised block, in defensive organised block. I think maybe one of the best iterations of that was Wadley in this game at Celtic Park. Before that, you know, Celtic 1-3-2, because I thought they went kind of a 4-4-1-1, but very narrow. That midfield four kind of covered Celtic's two number eights and their fullbacks quite well. And I think Celtic really struggled to play out under Ange's as well for it. Whereas December, I thought that mid-block, if you want to call it that way, you know, when Celtic have the ball, not under too much pressure in their own half, trying to build up, it didn't really seem as drilled as under Beal. Because there were so many times, you know, Celtic, especially on the left-hand side, would do, you know, quite a standard rotation, you know. GT would come inwards, Bernardo would maybe drift a bit, or they would be in the same area. And there were so many times they can kind of create quite a simple overload. You know, I think it's Cifuentes at that point, who's one of the mid two. And it just wasn't very tight. It wasn't very organized. I think Celtic had created kind of these small, quick overloads. They have two players against one Rangers players on the either side of that block, and they did quite well, whereas I don't think you would have seen that on the Beal. So then you go like, okay, how is Rangers pro block, their organised defensive structure now compared to December? I think you can divide it into two, Graham. It's that kind of mid-block when Celtic have the ball, and it's the high press. We can maybe get back to the high press, but again, looking at the kind of mid-block versus Benfica, again, I thought it was very narrow, and it's still like sort of a... So Rangers now very much play a 4-2-3-1. We can get back a bit, we'll talk about in possession, but out of possession in a block, it's kind of 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1, which is, you know, quite a classic setup. But again, especially away to Benfica, you kind of get the feeling that, as I said, if it's very narrow, one of their wingers, Neres, inverted quite a lot, and it caused them being very narrow, because both Tavernier and Sterling, you know, the winger and the fullback in that game, kind of got caught up looking at him. There was a lot of space down Benfica's left-hand side when they switched quite quickly from the right-hand side to the left. So the opposition fullback on both sides were often free. Tav, as I said, was kind of man-marking his winger quite a lot. I think players like Silva, Diomande, often they kind of be caught following the man, following the ball out of their space and not be aware of the man behind them in kind of their space, if you want to call it that. So again, it didn't, Graham, in terms of that kind of mid-blocky thing, they don't feel as drilled, as tight as Beal had them, as effective as Beal had them. So if Celtic do get into those positions where they're not a high press on them, if their rotations, if their movement is working, I think there's, you know, this Rangers team can be had at. And in a way, I think it's a bit more, not easier, but I think this team will leave more space in those situations than on the Beal's team.
Great stuff from Christian and Graham. As we say, we released that earlier this week. So thecynic.co, check it out. It's interesting that Rodgers is like a big game player. He seems to have got most things right in terms of how we approach the game. For we've won both derby games this season. Obviously we beat Feyenoord. You know, you can look back and be critical of the Champions League campaign overall, but we did do some good stuff in some of those games. Is that going to, obviously that is going to help us, Eddie, but does that give you a little bit more confidence that we're likely to get it right on Sunday, or what's your thoughts?
Well, firstly, I think if Brendan Rodgers is playing, I'd be very worried if he was playing, saying he's a big game player. But yeah, wow, okay, that didn't go over at all.
Get out of here. Get silence destroys it. Thank you,
Stu. Thanks a lot for backing me up on that there.
Well, I tend to mute my mic, so I was laughing, but
Stuart was laughing. He hated it. So,
oh man. Anyway. I think a performance similar to kind of Livingston is needed. Just consistency on both sides of the ball. Obviously, putting in performances against bigger teams in Europe is always a positive thing. But yeah, I really believe that it's going to be players like, say, Kuhn. I think Callum McGregor coming back in, Rio Hatate coming back in. We're going to just hope for great performances throughout. historically, obviously, there's a lot of players in our 11 that will be in our 11 that put in massive performances against Rangers at some point in their time here. Obviously, Hatate scoring two brilliant goals on his debut against them. I feel like there's a certain calmness about, say, Kyogo, Hatate, McGregor, even O'Reilly at points in games like this. So that gives you a ton of confidence going forward. But I think in particular, what's Stu said about Silva and Diamante, I think defensively we're going to have to kind of pay attention to them, in particular Silva. And so we're going to need kind of Kuhn to put in a very, very similar performance to against Livingston. Just he was amazing on both sides of the ball. I think covering those spots in particular is going to be very important. Obviously, I think the midfield is the most important. But yeah, there's so many different things. We can sit here and kind of go back and forth, like Stu said, as far as you know, things that will make the difference. But I think if we just put in a very similar performance to Livingston on both sides of the ball, it'll be all we can kind of hope for. And then obviously, you know, individuals like Kyogo and Hatate and players like that just going above and beyond to show how good they are in these games will be kind of that X factor.
Obviously, we don't know about, you know, up to date in regards to availability of players. We'll find out tomorrow at the press conference, and then we'll discuss that tomorrow on the weekend update. As I say, we're recording live. Myself, Alan Edgar, and Callum Gordon will be recording live through the cynic.co. So we'll kind of pick up on that a little bit more tomorrow. But Stuart, you would imagine that if the big players were available, that they'll play. Hatate certainly, CCV certainly, McGregor certainly. I mean, it is, if everyone's available, then the team kind of does pick itself.
Yeah, I guess it all hinges on McGregor. I can't decide whether or not we're just being coy with him because he is going to play or because he isn't going to play.
Yeah.
And you don't, I think if you announced at the start of the week that McGregor's not going to make it, I think that's a massive boost for them and they can cater towards it. So I think that leaving that as late as possible, for better or worse, is the correct thing to do in terms of making that public knowledge as much as we would like to see him.
I reckon he might not even make it public knowledge tomorrow, even if he's
I would agree. I would agree with
even
that.
Even if he's not available.
I would agree with that. And if not, then you have to presume Iwata starts. And I was going to say that if McGregor starts, when you look at the 11, the only two players that you would really be concerned about in terms of inexperience in the fixture would really be Nicholas Kuhn and probably still to a degree Liam Scales, just because he's done that once, but it's not really going to be, I know exactly how this goes, and he probably played that game in blind terror as well. So I think that would be positive. I'm a bit concerned about Kuhn and how he holds up in that environment. I think if he can go and thrive there and play as well as he has the last couple of weeks, then I think that all the indicators are that you've got a real, real talent. And I'm not saying he's going to be a Jota-level talent, but I think he's much, much closer to being a Jota replacement in terms of how he plays and how he can affect the game than, for example, a Palma has been. And then that allows, it probably takes a bit of the pressure off of a player like Palma to come in and just do what he does, which is maybe closer to like a Tom Rogic thing where you can just bring him on and he might be a match winner and he can do something like that. So Kuhn would be a concern for me, but I would be excited to be proven wrong because I think that, you know, they are struggling at left back at the moment. I think you're probably going to see Sterling play left back for them. And whether that's a good thing or not, I mean, he's quite big physically, so it's not ideal for Kuhn being so slight and so small, but we'll just have to wait and see how that goes. If McGregor is fit and if he's ready, then I guess he goes in and you have your strongest possible midfield. And I think that there's probably going to be a real focus on retaining the ball and trying to control the game and trying to play the game at our own tempo, which I think when everyone's playing well, they're completely capable of doing. And I think that we'll go to win the game, and I don't see it being set up like a draw is a good result, so let's go and try and stifle them and park the bus and kick the can down the road. I don't think it'll be like that. I think we'll go for it.
O'Reilly sends it in. Hatate. He's gone and scored again after his wonder goal at home.
O'Reilly has settled in superbly. Abada now has shot in again! And again! What a start to his Celtic career! Celtic go 2-0 up! Tate!
Yeah, we'll go for it from the off, Eddie. Or do you think it will be a more keep the ball composed? I mean,
say from the off. You were putting once in my mouth, mate.
I was sitting.
I've seen how you work. This is how you work.
This is how we work. Eddie, just to finish off, what do you think the pace of the game will be? Obviously, not. It's going to be 100 miles an hour, as it always is in these games, but do you think both teams will be cagey? Do you think Rangers will go for it because they're at home? Do you think we'll go for it because maybe Rodgers wants to get something to protect in the second half of the game? What's your kind of feeling on how the approach will be from both sides from the off? Not Stuart.
I think it's good.
Not Stuart. Stuart's words, mine.
I think it's going to be extra aggressive on their part. I think we're generally kind of going to go about our business the way that we usually do. I think sometimes it feels like we're forced into that urgency as far as, the high press goes. And I think obviously CCV and Scales just being, fairly slow on the ball. I think that's going to be one of the most important things to kind of get that out quickly to whoever that is, McGregor or the wingers. But I do think they're going to be extra aggressive and we're going to have to kind of match that, I guess, in a way, while also playing, that kind of calm, holding the ball, looking for space, which I do think there's going to be space available. It's just a matter of how quickly we recognize that and how quickly we execute that. So I think it's pretty much going to be as advertised. We're all going to be shitting our pants when the ball gets kicked in and immediately their front three are just up our ass, trying to force mistakes. So I think they're going to be extra, extra aggressive, obviously. And, with the crowd the way it is, it's going to be tough. But I do think that we're going to have to match their intensity from the jump, and hopefully Callum McGregor comes back with his mask on, and that would be pretty cool, because the 3-0 game,
yeah,
2 years ago, calling people shite bag, Tati scoring two, they're both back in the side. I feel like that's a nice little omen.
Yeah, so what I would say is this is the litmus test for any Celtic player to go to Ibrox and to win in a game that could potentially really go far to deciding the title. You have to stand up and be counted. I want these players to deal with this pressure, because if they don't deal with this pressure, I think that's a marker for them potentially not being able to deal with the pressure at Celtic. That's not every single situation, but I just think over the piece, I want us to deal with the pressure. And then I'll know if you've got, championship material all over you. We're going to finish with one comment, a lovely comment from Andrew McClendon. Afternoon, my fellow Tims. For me, it has to be the New Year's Day game of 1998, the Paul Lambert screamer. This was the first match me and my brother were allowed to attend on our own. The euphoria of the win led to us missing the train back to Blantyre and walking through Glasgow city centre, soaking wet, but delighted with my older brother telling me to hide the Celtic bag I had in my jacket in case we got spotted by Rangers fans. As young boys from Birmingham, this was the best feeling in the world. Sadly, my brother is no longer with us, but I'll always be thankful to Paul Lambert and Craig Burley for that great day. Lovely memory there, Andrew, and we appreciate you taking the time.
That's a lovely message.
Great.
Yeah, very thoughtful, very nice, and a really nice way to end the podcast. This weekend on The Cynic, tomorrow the weekend update is live from 6 p.m. We'll do the final kind of coverage of the derby with Alan and Callum. On Saturday, we've got The Cynic Wars. It's about 3.5 hours long.
I can't wait. Can't wait for that.
I'm still editing it, and it's wild. It's absolutely wild. And then on Sunday, we have the coverage of the Rangers game. So we'll be streaming live, as I say, from 10 a.m. We'll have some music to get us all in the mood. We'll have some music to get us all in the mood. And then from 11:30, we'll have build up. Myself, Chris Armani, and Christopher Bowd. We'll do a little bit at halftime. And then we'll have the reaction at the end as well. So that's the coverage of the Rangers match all through the day. Looking forward to that. Can't wait. But this has been a joy. Stuart, I'm feeling a lot more positive after speaking to you, gents. Thanks for getting involved, sir.
I was actually going to say that I now feel physically sick from discussing it for so long. So that's how I feel.
That's, you know, listen, we're all different. So fair play. But thanks for getting involved.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that.
Eddie, a joy as always.
Yeah, great to see you guys. Great to kind of talk it over.
Lovely stuff. From Stuart Duggan, from Eddie Walsh, from myself, Chris Gallagher, this has been The Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.
Are you ready?
The Rangers players must be counting the days until they can get at Celtic's dodgy defence.
Here we are, they're out of the Champions League, they've lost in the league, they've had a disappointing second half performance and a 1-1 draw in Lithuania against Sudova.
Hey, you think you can tell us what to do?
You know, I'm not going to talk about referees here in the press conference, it's not important now, it's done. But yeah, I thought we could have got a bit of a better performance from them as well.
You think you can tell us what to wear?
No Champions League money, no sale of Dedrick Boyata.
You think that you're better?
The Rangers fans are well entitled to go, see, I told you we were here, I told you we had a real team this season.
Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters.
Rubbish! Break it down! Come something again. Come something again.
You can tell me what to do. You know who you're talking to.
Well,
you better get used to the way the
world again.
I see what you got.
I told you we had a real team this season.
That's a great little man. Break it down.
Come something again. Come something again.
Think you're a big man.
Tom Rogic!
I treat you like you're a little man.
Goes well-distant Rangers into matching from Celtic! Comes up again!
Here we are, and it's the biggest match of your career. Why? Because everything you stand for is on the line. We remember all the times you made people grovel for your money. These were people far less fortunate than you. People who could use your money for essentials. And what did you do? You made fun of them. You humbled them, and you humiliated them. Well, now it's my turn. I'm going to make you beg. You are going to get down on your hands and knees. This time, you'll be the one that's humbled. This time, you'll be the one that's humiliated. And this time, you will be the one that grovels for the money. A victim of your own greed, wallowing in the muck of avarice.